Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming out on this wet, stormy, rainy day. I'm glad you all made it here safely, and let's be thinking of all the others on the road, and let's join me in Rise in Body or Spirit for the first hymn. Let's sing extra loud so the people in the parking lot can hear us. Number 348, Guide My Feet.
Good morning. My name is Lois Brown, and I'm your lay worship leader this morning. I'd like to welcome you all to Wildflower Church, a Unitarian Universalist congregation. Sharing this space with loving Christian neighbors means that some of our worship symbols, such as that big cross above my head, adorn our space. While Unitarian Universalism has its roots in liberal Christianity, today we believe that religious thought benefits from new insights and perspectives beyond any one religious tradition. We can also draw from philosophy too, if you believe in it, from science, from the arts, and from history, not to mention popular culture and nature. Our seven principles, which are found on the back of your order of service, unite us in support of each other as we actively shape the world for the better. A special welcome this morning to our first time and returning visitors. Thank you for coming out through the storm. Please be sure to join us for refreshment and conversation in the community room across the quad that way as you exit the sanctuary. As we note on the top of our orders of service, assisted hearing devices are available in the foyer. If you'd like one, a greeter out front will help you. Unitarian Universalists begin our services by lighting a chalice, a symbol of our faith. This morning, Paula Vaughn will light our chalice. Thank you, Paula. If you would join me in your chalice lighting words, which are in your order of service. With the kindling of this flame, we affirm our commitment to accept life's gifts with grace and gratitude, and use them to bless the world in the spirit of love. Now, for everybody's favorite part of the service, let's take a moment to greet those around us, especially someone we don't know well. I know this is everyone's favorite part of service, and I absolutely encourage you to continue all of that wonderful energy and greetings and conversation after service in the community room. If you would now please join me in our unison reading, which is also in your order of service, Values for Building the Beloved Community. Okay, Mother Nature's joining us. Got it. As we seek to build beloved community, may we work together knowing that loving power is created through equitable relationships with one another, allowing others to do what they can for themselves, and collaborating when we can be most effective. May we recognize our own biases and privilege as they affect our perspectives and relationships. Help us to know when to follow and when to lead as we acknowledge our best collaboration involves both. May we build bonds of trust and caring out of which we can engage others in decisive action. Let us encourage each other the development of leadership in one another. And may we nurture the spirituality of our work. In building the beloved community, let us be guided in all we do by our highest values and the better angels of our nature.
I'd like to invite everyone 1 through 99 for the words for all ages, if there's room. Good morning, everyone. Oh, and some are coming running in. Morgan's running in. Oops, I need a little more room than that. I'm not small. And who do we have here? It looks just like me. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you, Zyla. That's lovely. Thank you. It's lovely to see you all. And I know you all got here through the rain. And it was kind of, did you hear the thunder?
Yes.
Did you see any lightning?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't. Oh, cool.
Five strikes.
Ooh, I hope everyone's okay.
I woke up really early in the morning, and I was
Yeah, I got woken up by the rain. Yes. Yeah, the animals get pretty scared. Well, that's great, because this morning, so let's take a few minutes so I can tell the story, and I'll take a few questions at the end, okay? Thank you. Well, in a minute, Rufus, at the end, okay? Thank you. Because this story's about animals. You mentioned a cat. Well, this actually story's about a dog and a duck. Now, have you ever seen dogs when they're at the park and you see a flock of ducks? What do they usually do? What do they do, Si? Hold on, Zyla. Si, what was that?
Chase them.
Chase them, exactly. Well, that's what this dog always used to do. And it was... The rain was very heavy, wasn't it? Well, what happened, there was this dog, and it would see these flocks of ducks, and it would chase them all the time. But then they thought... He kind of saw the ducks flying away, and he got a little kind of jealous. He thought, that's really cool that ducks can just get up and fly. He says, I think I'm going to make friends with a duck. And the dogs and ducks, you don't normally see pairing together. So this dog went up to shouted at this duck from a distance so he didn't scare him, said, will you be my friend? Because I think I would really like to be your friend. And the duck kind of said, but you're a dog. You just chase me all the time. He says, yeah, but I'd like to be friends instead. And the duck went, okay. So the dog and the duck became friends, and they became such good friends, and they played together, that the dog decided he wanted to become a duck. And the duck said, are you sure you don't kind of look like a duck? He said, I'll just be a hairy duck. He goes, okay, you can be a hairy duck. So the dog started doing all the things the duck did, and some of it he really enjoyed. You know, he really enjoyed just the kind of the quacking noises, though he couldn't quite quack like a duck did. But he really liked it, and then he would go in swimming. But then he got really tired at the end and got really hungry. He said, well, I'd like to eat. What do you normally eat? And so the duck started eating like seeds and stuff like that. And the dog said, I really don't like duck food. So where do you sleep? He goes, oh, we sleep in the water. And the dog went, I can't sleep in the water. He said, well, that's what ducks do. He said, so the dog tried, you know, and he'd start dozing, and then his head would go under the water, and he'd start to drown, and he'd wake up. He said, okay, I can't be a duck. I'm sorry. So he kind of went home, and then the duck saw him the next day. He said, well, maybe I'll be a dog. And the dog kind of looked at him and said, well, you look nothing like a dog. I'll just be a feathery dog. And he said, but you only got two legs. He said, well, I'll learn to walk on my wings. And that wasn't very successful, as you can well imagine. So he died. He said, well, what do you eat? And he said, well, I eat in this food that my owner's put out. And the duck looked at it. That's horrible. I don't like that at all. That's horrible. So the duck said, well, where do you sleep? He goes, well, I sleep inside. He goes, you sleep inside? That sounds horrible. I love sleeping in the open air and the water. He says, I don't think I can be a dog. And they thought, so you can't be a dog and I can't be a duck. I don't think we can be friends. And the duck thought about it and said, well, we don't have to be the same creatures to be friends, do we? He said, I guess not. He said, we can just be different and still be friends. And they thought, that's a great idea. So they did a high five, but one's got a wing and one's got a paw. So it didn't work very well. I mean, the duck and you. But they did a high five and said, we're going to be friends even though we're different. Even though we eat different things, even though we live in different places, even though we sleep, even though we're completely different animals, we can still be friends. And that's the story. So thank you so much for listening. I appreciate all your intention. And try and get to your class without being wet. But there's a few questions. Sorry. Rufus, you had a question before. Yeah, well, that's a good place to be inside. Do you have a...
When there was a tornado warning, I had to get inside of my closet.
You got inside your closet. I'm glad you came. I managed to escape from your closet and get here. Thank you for being here.
So this morning, I was in the shower, and it sounded like hail outside.
Yes, you were in the shower, and it sounded like hail. It probably didn't just sound like hail. It probably was hail. So... thank you very much for being here. Thank you for all your questions. And it's time for your religious education. What is it? You can tell me. I'd like to invite Erin to join me. Well, many of us have really appreciated Erin being our ministerial intern for the last 2 years, and I've taken the job as teaching pastor very seriously. But last weekend, I totally messed up, so I ask your forgiveness, because Erin visited the Ministerial Fellowship Committee in Boston last Saturday, and this is a credentialing body in steroids. It's the best way I can describe it. You have to go, you've got psychological profiles, they have a 100 or 150 page file on you, they can ask you questions from all these books you've read, you have to give a 10 minute sermon. It's one of the most anxiety and stress producing things I've experienced in my life. Yes, Erin?
Absolutely.
Yes. And Erin passed last week, so. So this means that Erin is now recognized by our credentialing body as meeting all the qualifications of a Unitarian Universalist minister. It also means she doesn't need to listen to a word I say now. So. Though I question whether she did, but honestly, this is a really, really big moment, and it's really exciting. This is a huge achievement that you worked towards for years. It dominates your mind for so long. And it's a great achievement. And this congregation, Wildflower, has been a huge part of that, providing an internship for the last 2 years. That was not expected when I came here. So I really appreciate that. Erin, would you like to say a few words?
Thank you, Brian. Thank you to all of you for having me here and the role. We have still a couple months together, but it was a really hard time, really challenging, and I thought of you, and I missed you, and I'm so glad to be back. You know, it's just so good to be home and share that news with you. Thank you for all the feedback that you've given along the way, especially to the members of my internship committee. If you are a member of the internship committee, would you please rise or wave so we can applaud to you? We have two in the choir. Kristen, there's Libby. They've been privy to a lot of behind-the-scenes intensity, and they practiced with me. Thank you guys so much. Okay, so there is still more work to do, and I would like to draw your attention to something in the white insert. On Monday, April 10th, that is not this Monday, but next Monday, we have an evening arts worship that takes place not at 1:30 p.m., but at 6:30 p.m. in the community room. And why would we do this? Why would we have another worship service the day after we usually have one? Why would we have it at a different time, in a different place? Can anyone here think of a logistical reason why someone wouldn't come to church on a Sunday morning?
Weather.
Perfect. What else? They work on a Sunday morning. What else? They're sleeping. They're nocturnal. They play in a rock and roll band, and they sleep on Sunday mornings. Anything else? Those are some good ones. Maybe their child naps during service time. I know that's the case for some of us. And maybe there's people out there, I know there are people out there, who need spiritual sustenance and community, and they're just not going to walk through a church sanctuary door. Not now. Maybe someday, but not today. And so we're doing an evening arts worship service. The theme is, I Can't Keep Quiet. Have you heard that song that's going around Justice Movements? Look it up on YouTube if you don't know it, but it's I Can't Keep Quiet. And so we're inviting folks to come at 6:30 on Monday the 10th. You can talk to me after service. We're looking for folks to do artistic things, to sing, to bring poetry that you wrote or that someone else wrote, but that you just love, or who might be willing to dance or lead a meditation or do some painting or just bring a painting and put it on display. Think outside the box on this. And so we're looking for folks to come and do that and share something that's on their heart that they just can't keep quiet about. And we're doing it at this different time and space in the hopes of opening our community to different folks. And if you're not interested in being loud about something or bringing a new creative thing, we really would love for you to be there to come and witness what other people are going to share. So I hope to see you at 6:30 on Monday the 10th in the community room. Thank you all.
Next Sunday, is one of the high holy days of my wildflower calendar. You didn't know we had those, did you? It is the Sunday that we gather to award four $1,000 scholarships to high school graduates. Two of the scholarships will go to graduates of Travis High School, right across the street, and two will go to graduates of Crockett High School. This is about the sixth or seventh year that we've done this, and we are so excited that we can keep it going through the years. These are not just garden variety students. They're students who came to the United States with their families from Mexico, and they've worked very hard to achieve the success that they have. The mariachi band from Crockett High School will be here, and they'll add a great deal of energy and sound to our gathering. And the classical guitar group from Travis High School will be here also to play during the service. Following the service, we'll have a fiesta in the community room, and it is a huge celebration of the accomplishments of these students, their teachers, their parents, their friends, and all their families and loved ones. We will take a second offering for the scholarship fund so that we can keep it going in the coming years. So please join us to celebrate with our scholarship winners and show our support for their courage and hard work.
As many of you attended last week, we had the first fundraiser for the congregation in many years, and it was organized by Dagmar and Michelle, and Dagmar opened up her house, and it was a wonderful event. So I'd like to thank Dagmar and Michelle for the wonderful work you did with the fundraiser.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all for being so supportive and coming out and really being so generous with your time and money, and also for all those that stepped up and helped, and also for spreading the word and getting friends and family to come out. It was wonderful. We had such a good time.
Okay, she doesn't want to say the number, but I do. After our very modest expenses, we cleared $6,450. And I want to single out a few entities for special thanks. The weather god. The weather was great. The board, Brian, and especially board members Suzanne Rittenberry and Kathy Kramer. I want to thank those folks who helped me. I had a little accident a few days before, who chopped and cut food. And this is the first time I've prepared a big batch with one hand tied, not behind my back. And the people who helped set up and take down and clean the kitchen. And I want to mention something that's particularly important, I think, that approximately half the donations came from outside the church. So thank you very much. And thank you, Michael Johnson and Michelle, who's not here today. Thank you.
There's a lot of announcements this morning. We will get to worship at one point, but I have one more announcement to go, and that's a sign of a healthy church with lots going on, that we've got a lot of announcements and a lot of acknowledgement and gratitude to the service that many people in this room provide to the congregation. A number of years ago, during the settled ministry, there was clergy misconducted by Eliza Gallagher. This congregation did some really difficult work around that. And we had help from the Unitarian Universalist Association, and the Reverend Deborah Poblance came and held some, I know, I was not there, but I hear were highly emotional, very difficult conversations around that. Deborah is visiting us again today, and at 1:30 today, we will be having another meeting with Deborah. And one of the reasons that Deborah is here, she feels that Wildflower did some really, really tough work some of the best work she's seen congregations do around this, because stuff like this often gets hidden. It becomes a secret, and it affects the culture of the congregation because it's never talked about, a light's never shone on it. And Deborah here is to have another meeting to find out what worked really well for us, what maybe didn't work, because there's other, sadly, other congregations are experiencing something similar. So I'd like to invite Reverend Deborah Pope Lance up just to give a brief talk, an advertisement for this afternoon, and really want to thank Deborah for being here. So thank you.
It's really wonderful to look around and actually see familiar faces and be remembered by the persons with those faces. Because we did some really tough work, and you worked really courageously, really compassionately, and really centered on the values and principles that are important to you in this religious community. You are not alone in your history, but you are alone, nearly alone, in the courage and intention and purpose you put into that work 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago. And I want to commend you for that. I'm proud of you for that. We did some really great work together. You did most of it. That work has really been helpful to other congregations. You're not alone in the history you have. There are other congregations. But your contribution to the knowledge and awareness of the kind of work that can be done has really made a difference to a lot of congregations. And perhaps more stunningly, has influenced the Unitarian Universalist Association in the ways in which they support congregations and ministers and hold accountable congregations and ministers around these kinds of issues. So, particular commendations for that. In celebration of that, in honor, I should say, not just celebration of that, I come to you today in part due to a grant from the Unitarian Universalist Association in support of your continued work. I don't work for the Unitarian Universalist Association. I do live in the neighborhood of Boston. And just as an aside, it is so lovely to be here because what precipitation looks like in my neighborhood is 12 inches of snow yesterday. So this looks pretty good to me. What do you mean we can't get to church this morning if it hails? In any case, I don't work for the Unitarian Universalist Association, but I and congregations like you are often supported by their by the annual program of funds that you contribute to them and by grants from other organizations. So I'm happy to be here in part in support, supported by them. I also want to just say how important the work you've done with Aaron is. This will shock Aaron and all of you, but I went to the fellowship committee 39 and a half years ago. And it was still as daunting and as scary and as meaningful. But most importantly, I was able to do that because of the work of congregations like you in support of ministers in formation and guiding them well and clearly. And I love the last remark in your unison reading. Guided in all that you do by your highest values and the better angels of your nature. And I saw you do that 3 or 4 years ago, and I see evidence and celebrate that evidence in Aaron that you continue to do it. So I look forward to spending time with you this afternoon or catching up individually if you can't remain with us. And I'm greatly honored for the opportunity to be again of service to you.
So that meeting, it will be at 1:30 in the community room, same room that we have fellowship time. And I want to say everyone is welcome to that meeting. There was a notice that went out last Wednesday. But this meeting, in the era of transparency that we do with all aspects of our church that we can legally, is transparent to everyone. We've heard a lot about what goes on at this congregation, and we heard last Sunday during the trauma service a lot of the experiences that each of us bring to this church every Sunday that we come through these doors. We're now going to have a time of joys and concerns. This is a time where if you've got something that's weighing heavy in your heart, either as a celebration or as a concern, you may come forward and share it with the congregation. We invite you to drop a stone in the water. You can do that in silence. If you still want to keep that joy or concern in the sanctuary of your heart, you're welcome to do so. I will drop this big red heart in for all those joys and concerns that are within a congregation that will not be spoken. You can come forward at this time, and we invite you to use the microphone.
I am really grateful that Deborah Pope Lance is here, and mindful that last time I spoke with her and during the really hard times here at Wildflower, I was very pregnant, and now my little one is a wildflower here with us, and 3 and a half, I can't believe it. So a lot has changed, and I'm grateful that I'm still here. Thank you.
I'm going to be going on a trip to the East Coast to see my daughter. But I'm mainly going because my youngest cousin that they've made friends with is dying, and so I want to see him. I'm not thrilled about flying alone and haven't flown since my husband was around to fly with me, but I can do it.
My grandniece, Jenna Cusack, won first place in statewide competition for her sound design for her high school production of The Addams Family, and she also won awards for 2 short films that she made, and they're amazing. She's 16, and my husband, Lynn, was her first mentor, and I know she's going to have a lot of mentors, and she's going to go on and mentor a lot of designers in the future because she's amazing.
I'm struggling a little bit right now with my faith in the UU world that we live in, especially with the announcement on Friday of the things that have come to light in Turley. My heart aches, and I don't like seeing this, but I do like that we are talking about it and we are facing what's going on around us.
I'd just like to confirm that what happened was the email I sent out on Friday that a Unitarian Universalist minister, a community minister there, was arrested for having child pornography. This congregation was connected. I know Lois and a number of others did a number of service trips to Turley, Oklahoma, and met with Ron, who was arrested. According to press releases, as I said, as in the link that I provided in the email on Friday, he apparently has confessed to possessing child pornography. This saddens and angers me. It's disappointing. It tarnishes us as a profession. It's wrong, it's unethical, and it's hurtful. And there's no place for that anywhere, and perhaps especially in the ministry. And that was what Lois was referring to here.
I know that a number of us are struggling with health issues right now, and I just wanted to let you know that I'm holding all of you in my heart, as this community held me in your hearts when I went through my breast cancer. So this is for all of you.
my mother, who is 100 years old, and so apparently not welcome at a time for all ages. Has been in hospice for 3 weeks and is actually improving, but so far has been denied her fondest wish, which is to pass quietly in her sleep.
She is welcome.
We finished refinancing our house, and I can't say how much baggage came with that than just those simple words.
I've been sick and you haven't seen me for a couple of Sundays. And today, through the help of a lot of helpful and loving people at Wildflower, I've been able to come to church, which is what I really have needed all along. I wish it worked on my heart, my physical heart and my kidneys, as well as it works at my spiritual heart. Thank you, dears.
Thank you for all those joys and concerns that are shared. And we thank you for being here to witness them, because these burdens that are shared can lighten them. And these joys that are shared with us can be amplified by a loving community. So thank you. I invite you now to join me in the spirit of prayer, meditation, and reflection. Spirit of life and love, Spirit of this community gathered here that makes this a sacred time and a sacred place, we are thankful for this time together where we bring our full self, our joys and concerns, our hopes and fears, our dreams and even our anxiety. We are thankful for all who have shared joys and concerns with this community. We hope those who shared joys feel celebrated, and those who shared concerns feel heard and perhaps a little comforted. For those with concerns that remain in silence and in their hearts, we wish strength and comfort and courage for the days ahead. May all present here feel connected with each other and feel connected to that which guides them. When we are struggling, our isolation from others can amplify our sadness and loneliness, perhaps nudging some of us closer to despair. May those struggling at this time find a way to overcome their difficulties, or maybe just find a way to cope and endure them. May we find the strength, courage, and healing to guide us to find what is life-sustaining and life-affirming for each of us. Life is both a wonderful, enriching journey and a difficult, troubled road. May each of us remember that our journey is elevated and troubles eased through a community which both shares in our celebrations and our struggles. A community that laughs and rejoices with us, that cries and hurts with us, that cares about us at all times, and reminds us that we are both lovable and loved. May each of us experience that at Wildflower Community and beyond. I invite you to join me in silence. Blessed be, and amen.
Attitude is a choice. Happiness is a choice. Optimism is a choice. Kindness is a choice. Giving is a choice. Respect is a choice. Whatever choice you make makes you, you. Choose wisely. It's one of my favorite quotes. At this time, the offering will be gratefully received. If this is your first visit to Wildflower, we ask that you let the basket pass you by. Your presence here is gift enough. Thank you for your generosity. In the last few weeks, we've seen some difficult issues within our UU world. I have to admit, I've been struggling with how I feel about it all, including wondering whether I still belong in this faith. When things start feeling this dark, it's very easy for me to pull away and say, you know what, not my problem, time to walk away. But our faith has instilled in me something that I never would have thought of, the value of staying in the difficulty and working through the issues, no matter how hard. One of the things I'd never really experienced before joining a UU church was the idea of covenant. And it has become a life-changing experience to share relationships in which you agree how everyone is going to act and be willing to be called back into that agreement when you step outside those parameters. The fact that we can talk about difficult issues and work together to find solutions gives me hope. I have to admit, when I first started learning about covenant, wasn't sure I wanted to stay in that so much. I'm not sure I wanted to work with restrictions. I'm a good person. I don't need to be told how to act or be held to any line of conduct. But as the topics that we discuss get more difficult and more emotional, I have learned that I can participate in those discussions because of the idea of covenant. Our faith has taught me how valuable it is to honor relationship over difficulty and to truly live in covenant with those around me. Now, this isn't to say that I enjoy it or find it easy. Sometimes I really have to work at making myself listen. Instead of starting my own very well-reasoned and absolutely correct assumptions that the other person's wrong. And I often have to be reminded that I am not honoring the covenant I agreed to. My pride will take a bruising, and I often try to return, not necessarily doing a great job of it. But that's okay. In fact, I kind of think it's wonderful. I don't walk away. I don't lose myself in my emotions about a situation. I face those shortcomings, and I try to stay and seek my better self. I'm not perfect. Never claim to be. Don't think I'll ever get there. But being in this faith, I have had some of the areas where I am most troubled pointed out in glaring clarity. Not always the most fun moment. But to my ever-growing gratitude, I have found that not only can I walk away from those issues, can I not walk away from those issues and pretend they're not my problem, I have found that there are people out in the community and in this congregation who also try and also sometimes fail at living in covenant and our values. Those people are here to help me live a better life. Living in covenant and living our values helps me not run away from the sides of myself I don't like, but instead helps me to look at them so that I can change them. This liberal religion that we call home, and especially Wildflower Church itself, has accepted me at my best and when I couldn't even look in the direction of my best. If you can do that for me, I think I owe it to the church to do the same and to make certain that as a faith, we are not defined by our worst behavior, but that we continue to strive to live our values in all that we do. And for me, that is a gift.
I'd like to begin with a reading from Reverend Jackie Lewis, who was an African-American who worked as a professional for the UUA for many years. Blackmail, blacklist, black mark, black Monday, black mood, black hearted, black plague, black mass, black market. Good guys wear white. Bad guys wear black. We fear black cats in the dark continent, but it's okay to tell a white lie. Lily white hands are coveted. It's great to be pure as the driven snow. Angels and brides wear white. Devil's food, cake is chocolate. Angels' food cake is white. We shape language and we are shaped by it. In our culture, white is esteemed. It is heavenly, sun-like, clean, pure, immaculate, innocent, and beautiful. At the same time, black is evil, wicked, gloomy, depressing, angry, sullen. Ascribing negative and positive values to black and white enhances the institutionalization of this culture's racism. Let us acknowledge the negative connotations of whiteness. White things can be soft, vulnerable, pallid, and ashen. Light can be blinding, bleaching. Conversely, we must acknowledge that darkness has a redemptive character, that in darkness there is power and beauty. The dark nurtured and protected us before our birth. Welcome darkness, don't be afraid of it or deny it. Darkness brings relief from the blinding sun, from the scorching heat, from exhausting labor. Night signals permission to rest, to be with loved ones, to conceive new life, to search our hearts, to remember our dreams. The dark of winter is a time of hibernation. Seeds grow in the dark, fertile earth. The words black and dark don't need to be destroyed or ignored, only balanced and reclaimed in their wholeness. The words white and light don't need to be destroyed or ignored, only balanced and reclaimed in their wholeness. Imagine a world that only had light or dark. We need both, dark and light, light and dark. Those are the words of Jackie Lewis. And while a lot of what Jackie was talking about was the specific racism, I think the idea of black and white, those binaries that we have, are very limiting to us. This has been a hard week for Unitarian Universalism. The president of our association resigned this week. And the reason for his resignation was due to there's been some concerns, a lot of concerns, very powerful concerns brought up about hiring practices at our larger association. And while there had been progress made, there's still a lack of diversity amongst much of our professional leadership. Now, Peter Morales, who's our president, is from San Antonio. He's Latino. But he felt he struggled, and there was a response that he sent that did not help the situation. I'll say that. And so I think a lot of why he resigned in response to that. So our Unitarian Universalist movement right now is really looking at how racism plays out in all aspects of our institution. And I want to commend Wildflower Church, because 6 months ago, we started a program to look at how is white supremacy playing out in our congregation. We look at our staffing, which is all white. And so how are we going to address that? And how does it play out in the less obvious ways, the subtle ways, and music, and are we allowed to clap during worship, and are we not allowed to clap during worship? Can we respond? Can we say things? Because when we talk about multiculturalism and multicultural worship, it's not obvious what we mean. We were in a meeting a couple of weeks ago with many of you, with Julika Herman, who's an outside consultant who's working on us exploring white supremacy within our congregation, and she is Mexican. And I said, I don't know what multicultural worship looks like. Are we talking 50-minute sermons in the African-American tradition? Are we talking the rituals from the Catholic tradition for the Latino community? I don't think it's any of those things we're looking for. We are a Unitarian Universalist congregation, so we are going to worship in that tradition. And we can be more multicultural within that tradition. But I think where people from different ethnic backgrounds and different cultures struggle is not being allowed to be emotive. We shouldn't clap during worship. We can't sing along. We shouldn't move. It's this idea that we all need to sit in the pews and stay there. I really don't care if you get up and walk around. It does not bother me in the slightest, but there's something in our culture that stops us doing that, moving around. And So that's what we need to work on. We need to look at how this white supremacy of there is only one way of doing things. This is the proper way to worship. We need to expand that. And I think the project that Erin's doing on April 10th with this, you know, it's not contemporary worship. I'm not quite sure the name, but it's a really different model of worship. And we've been trying to bring some of that into our congregation here. And I think that's a valuable work because I think there's a lot of elements of us. Our worship structure is very much in the liberal Protestant tradition. And we have been Unitarian Universalism throughout our history, both in the Unitarian side and the Universalist side. We have been incredibly creative around religious thinking. In some ways, I feel we've still got a 200-year-old model of worship, perhaps older. Now, the content isn't, but the structure isn't. So let's all start thinking about how can we be more multicultural in our attitudes. And I've said before, multiculturalism's not about getting more people of color in the pews. That's a consequence of doing the right thing. Multiculturalism is each of us being able to develop different perspective of looking at things. How can we look at it from more than one perspective? How can I, as a straight white man, look at some from a queer perspective, look at it from a feminist perspective, look at it from a non-white perspective? That is what multiculturalism is, not just looking at it from one perspective. And it's not easy. It's challenging because it's fundamental to who we are. We're enculturated to see that. We're enculturated to see white as supreme. I remind people of this, the yin-yang sign. And one of the most beautiful aspects of this sign, I love it, I love the symbol anyway, but the idea there's a white dot within the dark and a dark dot within the white. And ultimately what that tells me is to break down those dualisms around black and white, and there's not a dominant. In each of us is the capacity and the potential for great good and great love, and in each of us there's a capacity to be hurtful. Alexander Solzhenitsyn has a beautiful line, the Russian novelist. He says, "The line between good and evil runs through the center of every human heart." The light between good and evil runs through the center of every human heart. And I think when we look deep within us, we know that we are capable of great love. And we know, we probably have examples in our lives where we have not lived to the better angels of our natures, not lived to the highest ideals that we have. A few weeks ago, I gave a sermon on universalism, and I was talking about how we're all, universalism has this incredibly difficult call to love all people. That is the call of universalism. And a number of you came up afterwards and said, "That's really difficult." Yes, it is really difficult to love all people, especially in this political climate. As you probably noticed at this stage, we're not going to explore the conservative-liberal divide that was the original idea behind the worship service. I'll leave that for a later worship service. But there is this huge divide between in a country right now, and we are losing connection with each other, because I don't think we understand each other. And one of my comments about universalism is we hold everyone in love, but we do hold some people further away than others. But we still hold them in love. We are still connected to them. Because liberal religion, at its best, it's about connection and meaning. We transform ourselves through the search for meaning, and we transform each other through acts of love. That, for me, is the core of liberal religion. And I think a lot of the work that's going on at the UUA, the Unitarian Universalist Association, around how can we improve our hiring practices, if done well, will be an act of love that will transform our association. And even more importantly than what happens in our association, may transform our culture. And the work we do at Wildflower, looking at how white supremacy plays out within our institutions, That is also an act of love, because we want to overcome that, not just because it's the right thing to do, not just because people of color and from historically marginalized groups or the global majority will feel welcome here, but because it will allow each of us here, each of us, regardless of ethnic background, regardless of color of our skin, regardless of our gender identity, regardless of affectation, will be, allow us to reclaim our humanity. We often say that religion is about growing our soul, growing our capacity for justice, and growing our heart for love. That is why we're doing this work. That's why addressing white supremacy is important, our larger association. And once again, I want to commend the work we're doing here at Unitarian Universalism, not just looking at the misconduct that we had before, but looking at how can we improve as an institution to be more welcoming, to be more loving, to be more caring, to be more justice-oriented within our movement in the days ahead. So I invite you to rise in body or spirit for our final hymn, Love Will Guide Us, 131. Love will guide us through the hard night. This has been a hard week. It's been a hard few months for many of us, and it will be a hard time ahead. But we have this community of love, this caring of the community of compassion and kindness. Remember, you can always bring yourself here. None of us are defined by our worst day. We're also not defined by our best day. We're always in between, and we are a work in progress. Go with love, go in love. Blessed be, and amen.